Welcome, welcome, dear podcast listeners, to a special episode here between the bubbles. I am Darren, and I'm with a very special guest. It's John Graham. If you remember, he was an interview of ours for his Kickstarter, Holiday Hooligans, which was a success on Kickstarter. And if none of you ordered it, you should. Hopefully some of you did. I know I did. We actually reviewed it on one of our episodes, and I raved about it because it was amazing. I mean, it's Ninja Turtles meets, you know, gingerbread men and a candy cane and a fruitcake. I mean, what's there not to love? But anyway, so John has had very successful experience with Kickstarters in the past, and he's helped other people, and we want to interview him because this is for all you Kickstarter artists and projects out there. Of how do you have a successful Kickstarter? Because everyone we talk to talks about how stressful it is and how hard it is, and just how do you do it? How do you cope with it? What are some of the tricks of the trade? So, John, thank you very much for being with us here right now. And anyway, yeah, so introduce yourself again. For those who have not heard us interview you for Holiday Hooligans.
All right. Well, it's great to be here. My name is John Graham. I actually had two projects that were successful on Kickstarter. One was No Sweets for Santa, a Christmas children's book, and the other one was the most recent Holiday Hooligans, both of which were successful. And I've also had a chance to talk to a lot of different folks about Kickstarter because I think it's an amazing platform for getting your product out into the mass market and get people to notice it. I've been helping people, and I also wrote a paper around it that kind of pulls a lot of the data out there together to make it a little more all in one place, so you kind of know what to do before you have to do it.
Great. Now, so have you consulted people with Kickstarter projects before?
Yeah, I've helped a couple organizations and folks get their projects on. One in my town was just recently successful, helping a community art center get some like refurbishing that they needed done. And I was very happy to see that successful. But I've sent the information out to a lot of different people. I'll talk about Kickstarter all day long when I go to Comic Cons or anything. That's my first question is like, hey, have you used Kickstarter for this? Because Kickstarter in the world of crowdfunding itself, is such an amazing part of the internet that I can't imagine someone trying to put something creative together without using this.
Do you feel like that Kickstarter, though, is not utilized to its full potential by people who are using it to promote their own projects?
Yeah, I think one area that people don't use it for as much as they should is just marketing. A lot of people I know are like, well, I've got the money for it, or I'm just going to do it all myself. I don't really need to raise any funds for it. Well, that really gives you the freedom to still put it out there on Kickstarter as just a marketing tool to kind of get your product in front of people. And even if it has a lower goal that you know you're easily going to beat, the fact that you're putting it out there in front of the world and giving everyone a chance to order something or just connect with people, I think is a valuable part that a lot of people don't think of. They're always just thinking of, man, I need to raise $2,000 and I don't know if I'm going to be able to do that, so maybe I won't even try.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if the thing is even if you need $2,000, if you go for $1,000 and you get that, then it's better than nothing. I mean, it's 50% of what you need. So the thing that I'm most impressed by is, so John has actually written two articles that gave points of what to do and how to be successful, and they're step by step. So what we decided to do here between the bubbles with John is that we'll have two specials. This is part one. Part two will be on Friday, and we'll just discuss in this interview kind of the what to do before you launch your Kickstarter. What are some steps you need to take? And there's five steps, and so we will go bullet point by bullet point, and I'm really fascinated because here between the bubbles, we've interviewed quite a few Kickstarters, and some have been successful. Unfortunately, some have not. And so I'm fascinated to see the world of Kickstarter and how to make it work. So anyway, so John, what is the number one thing when you're going to do a Kickstarter project? What is the first step that you're going to take?
I think the biggest thing is being able to explain your project and your goal. So if you can't convey what you want to do with the project, then I don't think anyone else is going to have a chance to really understand. You need to be able to say up front what you want to do, why you need the money, and how the pledges will help you create the end result. If you can do that, that's a big first step.
So how do you do that successfully?
I think just being able to summarize it in one quick paragraph. And I think you have to assume that everybody out there doesn't know how difficult it is to make a comic or to create some kind of item that goes along with like technology. So you have to really, I guess, and sometimes you have to dumb it down just a little bit and just help people understand that, you know, this is all the steps involved and this is why you need the money.
Well, I've noticed that sometimes it's very lengthy. What am I trying to say? The description of what their project is and why they're doing it. And I'll be quite frank, sometimes about halfway through, I just stop reading because it's, you know, like three pages. And you kind of lose interest into why I even want to be a part of this Kickstarter anyway. And that's always been hard. I have found, though, that when they do really creative videos, if it's them interviewing themselves, or if it's sometimes people do, you know, music and then just kind of the still photos and then some text, I actually really like those as well, because I lose attention very easily, and so it's nice to have something that I can actually watch and also listen to at the same time to kind of keep my interest piqued, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I mean, the video is a huge part of the Kickstarter project. If someone doesn't have a video, it's really hard for them to convey easily what they want to do. And that's when they start to do that essay in there, which we don't have time to go to every project and just read. You know, we want to watch a video, get a good summary of what's going on. So being able to explain it in just a paragraph, like you said, and not getting too technical, not getting too out in the weeds as far as, hey, this is what every little detail is. That's the most important thing. But there have been some amazing videos on there. And you can go on the Kickstarter and look at some of the most successful projects of all time and just watch the videos, and they are amazing.
Are they hard to do?
For me, I'll be honest with you. I do a lot of voiceover stuff, but if you look at the videos I've done, I kind of script it out, pull some pictures in, do some voiceover recording, you know, with basically a microphone and USB cord. And then I actually give everything I have to a high school student that I know, and he pulls it all together for me. I just kind of say what I need, and he does a great job. He actually has his own little production company now, and it's not as incredibly complicated. Now, you can make it as big as you want. You could do a huge blockbuster type of video, but you really got to get across what the mood is for your project. So obviously if it's technical and dry and, you know, if you try to make it funny, great, but make sure it's something that humor will be able to get people into.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. I mean, if you don't want to be, if public speaking is not your thing, a camera on you for 5 minutes as you try to struggle through is not the best option. Have friends talk, do some funny different things in there. I mean, you can do whatever you want pretty much, except use like music that you don't own and things like that.
Yeah. Well, even iMovie, I know if you have an Apple, it makes it very easy to make movies. And another question I have as well is, what are your thoughts on people giving their background story of their personal lives, or what got them to writing or to doing art or whatever their project is? Have you found that to be helpful when they are describing their project?
I think to some degree it does. My No Streets for Santa book, I kind of went into some background as far as why the story was created and why it's important, and creating that new tradition about leaving pizza for Santa. But But I think if you get too much of that, if it ends up being 2 minutes of here I am and here's, you know, all this stuff about me, you've really got that 60 seconds of the initial part of the video to capture somebody. And if in the end, they are investing in you, but they stopped at your project because they are interested in what you're doing. And they want to know what it is and what they can get out of it, pretty much. Getting to know you is just a byproduct, which is a nice byproduct, but it's not necessarily why they stopped.
Yeah, it's not essential. Now, so the other part as well as Kickstarters is obviously trying to entice people to get into your Kickstarter and pledge because of the incentives. Now, I found that that is one of the most challenging things of just even thinking of what do I do as an incentive? Why, you know, what can I do to draw people to go into my project, and then what can I even give them in return? I mean, do I just mention their name in the book? Do I actually give them a PDF? Do I give them a copy? Is there other ways? I mean, what are some of your thoughts on creating good incentives and basically to draw people into your project?
I think the biggest things you have to think of is, one, what can you tie into it? And it doesn't necessarily have to be, just a copy of the book. When I put out Holiday Hooligans, it was just a comic. So I thought, man, I could do one comic, then two, then three, then five, but people aren't going to order 10 comics for $50. You know, it's just not going to happen. So what can I do to make it a little bit better? Now, I had my book in there also, but trying to think out of the box a little bit, like sketches that the artist did for the comic that you add in there. Like you said, definitely creating a page, thanking the people that put their money behind your project and listing them in there. Everything from putting their name on a website to giving them some kind of original art to actually drawing them into the book I've seen done.
That's cool.
Yeah, there's people that do all sorts of stuff in there. And then for me, my big pledge amount, which was the $50 pledge, I handmade ornaments for a Christmas tree based on the characters, you know, and kind of I had some old slide holders, and I colored the copied the characters on a transparency, put them in there. Yeah, it wasn't like the most amazing professional job, but every single one was done from the heart. So
it's made with love.
The people that got those really appreciate them.
Did you get feedback from the people who you made the ornaments for?
Yeah. And actually, I'm trying to figure out how to make more because they really liked them.
Really?
Yeah. It's and one of the final things is I sent a CD to the $50 pledgers where I dramatically read the comic book into a sound file with sound effects that I did myself.
Wow.
So, yeah. And it's, you know, it didn't cost me anything. It cost me some time. And obviously, there's some points where I feel pretty silly because I'm doing the sound effects of like a cat attacking fruitcake. But
you didn't have a recorder of a cat. You did the cat noises, and then
I did everything.
Wow, that is
impressive. I thought it'd be more funny that way. And actually, my karate sounds at the end of the Karate Cane, the portion is really quite interesting. So, and there's a huge fight scene where I did all the fight scene noise myself, including the people getting beat up. That's just enough of a novelty that, people thought, wow, this is something special that I'm going to get. And then I'll eventually have that out on YouTube or something, you know, as kind of a promotional piece. But for right now, it's just for those people who are, pledging the amount, the $50.
Well, the thing that I liked with the amount that I pledged, the gift, I guess you could say, or what you will, was not only the comic book, but I got a coloring book of No Sweets for Santa, which was basically, and I don't know if you meant to do this or not, but it's kind of another marketing thing for another product of yours, because if people like the coloring book, then they will probably want the, you know, actual real No Sweets for Santa story. And then there's also a postcard for the No Sweets for Santa. And so you were using the pledges as marketing ploys for your other products. I thought was really interesting.
Right. Yeah, I had to assume that, you know, if they're looking at Holiday Hooligans, they like the holidays. So, and I, since I had that other product from the holidays, being able to tie that in. So, again, if someone's stopping at your project, then, and they're stopping there because they like what you've written or they like what you've drawn, if you have anything that you put out previously that you maybe have a box of, you know, a box of comics that you printed before or some books, definitely look at incorporating those in, because if I'm interested in you as a writer and I feel I find out you've got two other books, and by pledging an extra $20, I can get the two previous books and this most recent one, you bet. You know, why not? It's not anything out of the norm. If I can get them, you know, signed and something like that, that's great.
Yeah, I just thought that was a really cool tactic, actually. I thought it was really great. So now the another part is setting a proper goal. I mean, and like you said before, people think, well, I need $2,000, but I can't get $2,000, so why even try? So how do you even come up with the number? Obviously, you know what your budget is and what the finances are, but how do you come up with a reasonable number that you really feel like that you can actually accomplish?
I think you really have to analyze realistically, what do you need to get this thing done? And if that means you saved money and put it aside. So when my first No Sweets for Santa, it's a hardback book. And my goal on Kickstarter was only about half of what the actual cost was, but I had raised money myself, and I made sure I put that, you know, in the video that, hey, I've got some money. I'm putting a lot of my own money into this, but I just need some help getting over the hump there. But if you come up with a goal number that you feel might be too high, just take a look on Kickstarter, and if other people have similar projects for less money, then it's going to be unlikely, unless you're some big name. I mean, obviously, the big names can get on there and put whatever they want, and they're going to get.
Gail Simone went on there and I think got $40,000 or $60,000, but it's Gail Simone. I mean, people know her from Batgirl right now, or when she did Birds of Prey. I mean, she's very popular for that. Wonder Woman. So it made sense.
Yeah. So just really, you got to kind of build in what you exactly need. But remember that Kickstarter is going to take about 5% off the top. That's their fee for letting you use all their marketing tools. And they have a lot of great tools that they give you and ways to identify where the pledges are coming in. I mean, they have a lot of stuff set up for even after the project's completed, where you can organize the data and send things out, send surveys. So you are going to pay for that. You're going to pay about 5% of what you raise. The money collection is done through an Amazon system, so you got to figure about 3 to 5% there too. So with that, I mean, if I need $1,000 just to print my books, I have to add in, you know, okay, well, it's going to be $1,100 because I need that $1,000. But then a lot of people don't think about is, what's it going to take to ship the stuff that I say I'm going to ship out? So once you print those books, what do you have to pay at your local post office, at your envelope store, your packaging store? What's it going to take to get that stuff there? And that will feed into your incentives. I mean, obviously, I love comic book art, original comic book art, as much as the next guy. That's really going to drive me to pledge. If somebody puts that at a too low of a level and they have an 11 by 17 piece of original art, I'll jump all over that. But when they go to ship it, I don't know if you've ever tried to ship a single sheet of 11 by 17 in a special envelope.
It's expensive.
It is. It's very expensive. So with Holiday Hooligans, I offered a copy of the comic for $5, which I felt was fair because, you know, it's about what the retail is. But everybody that ordered that one comic and gave me the $5, I don't even think I broke even on a lot of people, because getting the envelope, you know, the bubble envelope for it, that was about, you know, 50 cents to a dollar. Getting the comic printed, taking the time to sign it, personalize it, you know, putting some other stuff in there. And then if I had to send it, to the west, you know, I'm on the East Coast, then I'm looking at $2, maybe $2.50 roughly for first class mail, because media mail doesn't really matter at that point. It's too small. So you can actually start to lose money if you don't take into account the shipping into your goal setting.
So would you say then with the cost to Amazon Kickstarter and shipping the incentives to maybe add around, what, $200-$300 extra dollars just to make sure that you have a good cushion?
Yeah, but you have to be really comfortable with what you're – like you have to really ask yourself, am I going to beat this goal? Because in the end, you want to beat your goal. You want to put down $1,000, and if you come in at $1,800 – you know, that puts you as like a cool project. You know, it's like, oh, this is, it's really catching fire. It's doing a great job out there and gives you a little marketing support through Kickstarter. And people tend to catch, you know, catches their eye a little more like, oh, what's going on here? Because it's already 180% to goal. So you can't undercut yourself too much, but you can't add too much on there where people stopping by and looking are like, I don't think it's ever going to raise $2,000. So why would I even bother?
Yeah. Well, I've noticed as well as people, instead of wanting to do, I mean, they have this, you know, 5-6 comic issue planned. And so their Kickstarter's to fund for all 6 comics. And I've noticed that that is a hard thing to get because then the, I mean, the cost is in the $7,000 to $8,000-$9,000. And you know, I've seen that when they have, they didn't successfully get funded, and so then they had to go down to like $1,000 or $2,000 to do one comic, and they funded it like very easily. And so I've noticed that as well, as it might be good just to really start out small, and even though you have this big story planned, focus on just doing one comic at a time, because you know that there's a lot more feasible to reach your goal than if you have 5 or 6 issues that you're trying to create.
Right, and the time frame sometimes is a big turnoff for folks. You know, when you're doing a project and you're saying, hey, sometime in 2013, summer, you're going to get it, that might be a turnoff too. But I think the biggest thing you have to really be strategic about is what are you offering for $25 and what are you offering for $50? Because Kickstarter said pledge level is one that is picked by most people. When you think about it, you know, $25, if it's got some good stuff in there, you bet that's not out of the norm. So more people hit the $25 pledge than anything else, but the $50 pledge is the one that funds the most projects. So when you look at that data, those two need to be just right on where, you know, they need to be really substantial pledges.
That makes sense. That's interesting, though, because you'd think that with the $10 pledges being obviously more affordable for a lot more people, that you might be able to fund it better with getting just a lot more numbers of those. But as you're saying, the $25 and $50 are the ones that actually fund the projects more than the mass numbers of the smaller amounts.
Yeah, and there's always some variables, but $25 is where people get to, they start to have a little freedom. So you're going to get like the book, and then maybe you get, you know, a T-shirt or something. You know, it's like the add-on pledge. So it's nice to get the book. It's nice to get whatever your, you know, whatever your project is signed or anything like that. But you figure that's like the $10, $15 range. People want that extra thing, whether it's a hand-drawn sketch or something at that $25 level, just to make it a more unique experience for them.
That's great. Now, we also talked about preparing a video, which, I mean, we already discussed. I don't know if there's anything else that you'd want to add to that from what we already did just discuss.
I think the biggest thing is just when you're thinking about the video, it's not possible to just sit down and crack a video out in one afternoon. You have to record over and over again. Pick your favorite ones. Get feedback from people, you know, do multiple takes, do multiple angles, you've got to invest some time in the video. You got to really think it out, either script it out or do something. But people want to know who you are, though, so you don't want to have it so scripted that you're that it's like me looking in the camera, reading word for word on a piece of paper underneath the camera, where I can really, you know, you want to be real. But when you're real, sometimes you get off track a little bit and it just ends up being a 10-minute video, which is not going to work. No. So you really have to just edit. And Kickstarter says the same thing. They have a whole section for making a video, and they just say edit, 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 and make sure your lighting's good. You know, make sure you invest the time you need and the resources you need in that video.
That makes sense. Because I've noticed some Kickstarter videos, the person is just, you could tell that they took some takes, but it's not as polished as it could have been with them
right.
explaining their project. And
if you're not like a audiovisual guy like me, then have your resources. I mean, like I said, you're going to know somebody, or somebody's child is going to be amazing with a video camera.
Some high schooler where you live has his own production company.
Yeah, the young man Connor, he does a great job. It is M&L Productions, I believe is the name of his group. And they make videos all the time. They try to make movies. And so why wouldn't I use that resource and help get him out there, get some more publicity his way? And he enjoys it, and I enjoy it too. So,
well, there you go. Now, the last topic before we end this part one of our interview is obviously creating an appealing page. Now, this is my biggest question, because it looks like Kickstarter has already kind of a format that you use. Is that true?
Yeah, you're basically just filling in the different sections, and it prompts you with a lot of great questions, like, you know, asking you what some of the obstacles you might have, or here's where you want to put your background, things like that. So it is a standard layout, a standard format. But what you do in there to kind of give your overall page, like your brand, is so important. When I do my project, and it's not necessary to do this, but if you look at my Holiday Hooligans page on there, or even the No Sweets for Santa, you know, the pledge levels are all named. So on No Sweets for Santa, you have the Holiday Pledge, you have the Claus Kitchen Pledge, the Coloring Pledge, just the Book Please Pledge. And I think that kind of makes people, I mean, they get a little more excited about it. Like, oh, you know, what did you get? I got the Elf Pledge. You know, so you kind of have to have it tie back into the theme of your just overall project.
Well, I've seen that. Some of the people we've interviewed, I don't remember if it was WatchGuard from Charles McKelvey, or if it was Chris Welsh from Clutch, but they had, maybe it was both of them. But they had different names. One of them had this, like, it was like a ranking of military. And so you're, you know, a lieutenant, then general, or whatever. And I think it maybe it was Clutch. But Charles or Chris, if you listen to this, and I butchered that, I'm really sorry. But it's really stuck out to me because it was just really cool. And then even the descriptions tied into that rank, you know, of how you're, you know, helped going through the grind, or you've overcome these obstacles, or it was really cool. I really liked it. Right. And I thought it did add to their webpage and their product.
Yeah, and those pledge levels will then tie into the video, like your theme of the video and how you're talking on the video. And then the main area where you're kind of giving the little background, man, jazz that up with some pictures, some sketches, whatever. So as people scroll down, they get a real, like, just a visual blast of here's what you're going to get, or here's, you know, some stuff from the book, or here's some pencils that we already did. Different things like that to kind of make people want to scroll down and see all the different things. If you look at a great Kickstarter project that I just supported not too long ago, it was called Oxymoron by Comics Tribe. And there, I mean, they just sent updates nonstop. They had so much content in there. They ended up doing variant covers for their graphic novel. And every time you turned around, there was more just full color, beautiful pictures in there. So it made me want to keep going back to the page as they were beating their goal so much and adding more stuff on to say, wow, what do I get now? You know, I just, even though I've already ordered the book, now the book is a little bit better. Now the book has 8 more pages of bonus material. Now I've got 8 covers to choose from. You know, just the excitement makes you want to share it more with other people. So try to get that excitement into your project.
Well, I remember you actually sharing that book on Facebook, actually.
Yeah, and that's
Moron. I remember you doing a couple things on Facebook.
Yeah, and I think that's a big part of you as someone who is going to be on Kickstarter. You have to get your friends on Facebook, your family, kind of conditioned to the idea of crowdfunding. So before I put my first project up, I was started going on. I was sharing stuff, not a lot, but sharing different projects, trying to get people involved in it. As common as crowdfunding is to me, it's pretty commonplace. I just go on and find stuff and pledge for it. It's lots of fun. There are people out there that are still intimidated by technology and the idea of going to a website, and even if it's hosted by Amazon for the money side, they're still like, I don't know about getting my credit card, and I don't know how this works. And especially since you're not charged until the end of the project. The project has to be successful before people's cards are charged. It's hard for them to get their mind around that. So they'll give you the, well, I don't have the money right now. I'm waiting for payday. And you have to kind of get them conditioned to the fact that, no, it's not until payday. It's, you know, you can pledge right now and it'll just wait until the project's done. If it's successful, it'll charge your card. So share that stuff with your friends and family. Don't make it the first time you do your project is when you're bombarding them with, hey, there's this thing called crowdfunding and support me. They'll be like, what is going on? I don't understand.
And why are you even blasting me with this information, you know, multiple times a day? The other thing I've noticed as well is yes, it is through Amazon, but you don't know if when you first pledge is, well, I know this now, but if you're new to crowdfunding, is that money going to that person directly? So how do you even know that you're even going to get the product? Because you don't know who this person is. And so I think that's a good thing as well, like you're just bringing up to explain that it's paid through Amazon, which is very legit. You know, it's not like they're just taking your money and then running away with it.
In the end, your project is a way for people around the world to purchase your stuff through a secure method before it has a chance to be released. So if you think of it that way, it's almost like they're joining an elite club. I'm pre-buying this, and because I'm pre-buying it, I'm getting it at a little bit of a discount, or I'm getting it signed, or I'm getting a sketch, something like that. So I don't understand why anybody wouldn't just put something on there, even if they have the money for it, because it's pre-selling, it's pre-advertising, it's some of the most important things that you can do for your product.
Yeah. Well, thank you, John. So that was the end of our part one, where we talk about what you need to do before you actually get on Kickstarter. Stay tuned for part two, because we will talk about once you're on Kickstarter, what is the next step to be successful? If you listened to part one, which hopefully you all did, you might have noticed there might have been a little cyborg-like noises or whatever. We have to unfortunately do these interviews over Skype, and Skype, unfortunately, you use over internet, and with the internet, you don't know if it's hit or miss. And so, if you had a hard time understanding us, hopefully you still got the gist of what was going on, because I know my voice was going a little robotic there at the end. Which, let's be straight, I wish I was a cyborg, but, you know, unfortunately, we don't want that noise. But here's our part two. We're talking about what's going to happen when you have Kickstarter set up, such as time frame, social media, all that great stuff. So here we are with John Graham. John, how you doing?
Great. Great to be back.
Yeah, great to have you back. So let's just jump right in here. So the first step, once you have your Kickstarter set up, everything's looking good with the video and you've done your incentives, what now happens?
Well, I think once you've done your template, you've got all your incentives, you feel really good about it, the first thing you really want to think about is what kind of time frame do you need? Do you need, you know, some people like to put a really long time frame out there. hoping that that means they'll raise more money. But when you look at the facts from Kickstarter, they suggest no more than a 30-day time frame.
Really? Not even 2 months? Not even 2 months.
Because the reasoning is if you're going to pledge for something, you're going to pledge for it in a month. The problem is if you set a 2-month time frame, a lot of people will give it the, I'll come back to this later. I got a lot of time to think about it. They'll put their money in other places. And that's where you get dangerous because you can only advertise or promote it so much before people just get tired of hearing about it. So.
Wow. That's actually, I would have thought that 2 months would be a good time frame, but that makes sense because they just put it on the back shelf in the back burner.
Yeah, yeah, and people just don't want to hear, they just don't want to see you updating over and over again on Facebook that you have this project that has not made its money yet, and we got 45 days left, and then 30 days left, and then, you know, it just gets a little old. So you have to really be careful when you do your time frame. Now, you don't want to probably go under a month because something people don't think about is your paycheck cycle. So when you're setting that start and ending time, think about how the paychecks run for that month. People typically get paid twice a month. So if you end your project maybe the second half of the month on like a Saturday or Sunday, that second paycheck is in the bank. They typically have some flexibility because they've done their house payment or apartment payment. They paid all their big bills out of that middle of the month and gotten them out of the way. So now they have a little more discretionary time. So when it pops up again, they're like, oh yeah, let me give them a hand.
So you would actually recommend then starting like, we'll say November 1st and ending it on December 1st.
Yeah, I like the month.
Not doing November 15th to December 15th.
Right. Yeah, if you do that, I like a solid month because then when you get ahead of it and you're talking to people, you could be like, well, for the month of November, you know, I'm going to have my project on Kickstarter, so please take a look at it. Now, if you want to do 33 days and have like kind of a quiet opening type thing where it starts October 29th and runs through December 1st, I don't think that's going to, you know, really make it horrible for you.
Yeah.
It might actually give you some time to get some prep work done. You can still tell people, hey, the month of November, it's going to be on there. But, having those couple days in advance kind of lets you test the water a little bit and get some last advertising promotion stuff out.
Well, so then, I mean, talk about advertising and promotion. I mean, it says here in your paper, before you go live, start grassroots campaign first. So
right.
Why is that so important?
You want to have that level of excitement about your project really high. So once you put it on there, people are just, they're chomping at the bit. They know, man, I really want that piece of original art, or I heard that $30 or $50 incentive is going to have this. And so you need to do some prep work, either going to maybe some blog sites that you typically visit that have similar things, and kind of pre-advertising, pre-letting people know that, hey, this is my project coming up. Letting people know on email, Twitter, Facebook that, hey, you've got this thing coming up and you just really appreciate their support. So if you have a website or you have maybe a Facebook page for your product already, try to do maybe a soft launch for the project about 20 to 30 days before. Then that just starts to hype up the demand for it. And that kind of helps you get that people sharing the information with others. And so once that thing goes live, you want people to just hit on it as fast as possible.
That makes sense. So what have you found the best ways to do that, though? What's the best method of doing the grassroots route?
For me, I'm a big fan of Facebook. I think the best method is to really do like the individual kind of communication, whether it's a message through Facebook or an email to somebody, especially if they're already not going to be comfortable with crowdfunding or maybe computers in general. Heck, you might even want to send somebody a letter that they're, you know, this is what I'm doing and I could really use your support. And you can talk about everything that you have right now, like the, all the data, you know what your incentive levels are going to be. You know what, you know, your goal is. You should have all that pre-communicated to folks, and that gives them a chance to really think about it and put aside some stuff. And maybe they have an idea like, wow, you know, you should take this project idea and just go to the Comic-Con that's going to be next week and just hand out some flyers for it, you know, or, you know, go to a motorcycle show or something like that because you're doing a motorcycle comic and, you know, hand it out to get some flyers to hand out to kind of build that more like a bigger audience for when your project goes live.
Well, you actually, I remember when you did No Sweets for Santa, you sent me a personalized message on Facebook. And that's because I at that point, this was a couple of years ago, I did not know about Kickstarter at all. I didn't know what it was. And so I really appreciated the personal explanation of what it was. Instead of you just putting on your status, this is what I'm doing, I would have no idea what Kickstarter is. I mean, what is it, a car thing? I have no idea.
Yeah, I can't stress it enough. I can't stress enough the fact that the last thing you want to do when promoting your Kickstarter campaign is to put everybody in your address book on the to line of an email and send it out to everyone. If you can't take that time, it does take a little bit of time to send somebody, and you can kind of pre-manufacture the message and then just personalize a little bit here and there. So you don't have to type something special for each person. But if you can't take that time, then it's just not going to work because people don't like to be spammed. The second they think that they're spammed, they just delete it and they don't even think about it.
Well, that's what made me more interested was because, like, wow, John actually sent this to me personally. It wasn't, you know, 5, 6, 7, even if it was 3 or 4 names, it meant a lot more having it just to me with, you know, even when you're writing it, hey, Darren, and then, you know, yada, yada, yada. It made me more inclined to actually check it out. And I did, and I actually got No Sweets for Santa because of it, because you sent me that personal message.
Yeah. And I mean, just think about everybody, your friends, your family, people that you've been talking to about your project, they're invested in you. Just giving that advance notice to them. So people want to support you. People want you to be successful, but a lot of times they just don't understand how. So giving them that prep work is a lot better to do in advance. And that way, when the project is going on, all you have to worry about is keeping people updated, adding different, updates as far as here's where we are. And here's, if we reach this dollar amount, then I'm going to add this in here or make the book a little better. I want to talk for a second about the life cycle of pledging also back to the 30-day time frame. Kickstarter has some data on there that says when a project starts, it's new, it's exciting, and you get a lot of pledges right there in the beginning. And then after about a week, it just drops off. Just picture like a valley. And then right near the end, it picks up again. People are... if it's close, people are like, oh, we got to get this thing through, got to get that support through. But you really need to think about what you can do in that valley of no pledge time to keep people engaged. For me, for No Sweets for Santa, I wanted to send the book to the printer halfway through the project because I felt pretty comfortable I was going to get it. But I just wanted a little push right there in the middle. So we had an extra page, and I decided to do a thanks to our Kickstarter backer page. Now, I didn't want to hit everybody every week with like a special email, but I did send the email out that said, you know, the Kickstarter project's coming with the link. But then about a week and a half into the project, I was able to send another one out that says, and this is more specific to people that I really thought would support me, but hadn't yet. So I was kind of thrown off a little bit. I was able to send something just to them and say, look, this is what's going on. I'm going to send it. I'm putting this page in there, and everybody that's pledged as of this day is going to have their name in the book. And I really want to have your name in my book because I think it's important. And if you pledge by this date, then I'll be sure to get your name in the book so we can capture that. And it was amazing what that little Hit of Urgency did, it kind of, that's what got me over my goal by the second week, was just doing something like that. Yeah, they just didn't procrastinate anymore and just jumped in there.
That's interesting. So you came up with something to basically help during the lull moment of the whole Kickstarter thing. Because I've noticed on Twitter that some people during that time get really, really disheartened and really frustrated. And sometimes that's when they give up. They're like, I'm not going to reach my goal, so I'm done. And they drop the project altogether. And that's always sad to see.
Yeah, you get on such a high when you're seeing all these emails hit your email that says, so-and-so pledged, or you just got another pledge. You're like feeling so great for the first week. And then all of a sudden you get that dead zone. You're like, oh, I'm not going to make it. I had all these plans and dreams. What is going on? You know, so you've got to try to think of things in that middle. Maybe it's a podcast interview right there in the middle, like I did with Holiday Hooligans. Or it could be going on the radio, or a newspaper article in your local paper that says, this person's doing this thing called Kickstarter to raise money for their project. You know, local boy does good type stuff.
Yeah, that's interesting. I never even thought about that, using your community. That's cool. Now, so once now you're live and you've done the grassroots technique, you're now using social media for support and updates. Now, how does that work? I mean, it sounds self-explanatory, but I think it's a lot harder done than said.
I think the main thing is for Kickstarter, they have like a little widget you could put on your website that kind of keeps the totals going up. The big thing about social media, again, you don't want to overwhelm your friends on Facebook or Twitter with, you know, here's where I am every day. And, you know, I just reached this pledge level or anything. Try to give them something new or different, not just a check this out or pledge. So you can, like, if you're drawing out your comic right now and you're finishing that up, why don't you post some pictures of the latest page of pencils and say, hey, this is where I am right now. You know, page 22 is being penciled. And the project's going on right now, so click on this link and head on over there and help out. But yeah, you don't want to just desensitize everybody to every project you'll ever do for the rest of your life and have them defriend you because they're just tired of hearing about, man, this guy, he's just telling me every day that I need to pledge. I don't want to pledge. So there are people out there that like you that aren't going to support you. That's just the way it is. But you've got to think of cool ways to share that information without making it look like you're constantly bugging them to share that information.
Now on Twitter, because Twitter works differently than Facebook, because Facebook, if you're doing multiple updates, people get really annoyed and frustrated, where Twitter, it's a little bit different. But do you think that it's less effective to keep posting, you know, every 30 minutes or every hour your Kickstarter on Twitter, or do you think that's a good idea?
Now, I don't have a Twitter account, but I have heard, like with the Oxymoron project, some of the artists were talking about their Twitter feeds, and they said it was very successful as far as using Twitter to get things across, especially as it was climbing up in dollar amounts and they're adding new things on there. I mean, they were tweeting pretty much nonstop. So there is some differences between Twitter and Facebook. So I think with Twitter you're allowed to go a little more crazy as far as, you know, all the data you're sharing and constant updates.
So Twitter have at it, where Facebook be a little bit more reserved, at least with the amount of updates that you do, or posts, right. I guess you could say. Okay, because that's kind of my feeling is here between the bubbles, we'll do usually one post on Facebook and that's about it. We're on Twitter. I'm the one that does Twitter and I feel like I can tweet as much as I want. It's no big deal. I mean, I'll be doing, you know, 7 or 8 different variations of what our topic is for our show that day, where Braden on Facebook does one post on Facebook, and I feel like that is plenty. Like, we both don't want to do more than that on Facebook because we don't want to annoy people or block us on Facebook because, like, oh my gosh, here's another post today from them, you know, about their show, you know, whippity-doo. So that just made me curious with how Kickstarter works with Twitter and Facebook. That's interesting. So now that you've done your project, you follow these steps, you reach your goal, now what do you do? Because I think that's the hard thing is, do people really even plan ahead, you know, and think of actually reaching their goal and all the work it entails afterward? Because I think we have this vision that all the work goes in the middle when we're doing our Kickstarter project, and then we forget that, no, you still have a long ways to go even after you complete it.
Right, yeah. Once you're done, that's really when the big work starts. Now, if you've made your goal halfway through and you're an artist and you know that, you know, 10 people signed up for the sketch package or whatever, and they, you know, you can start working on those sketches initially, that'll help you out. When you start a project, it does ask you when the items will be available. So that's one part of it where you've got to be realistic and say, if I'm publishing a comic book, it's going to take about 6 weeks after I send the files, 4 to 6 weeks to get that comic book back to me at my house. And then I've got to put it together with some other stuff and put that together and mail it out. So that might take another week or 2 weeks. Kickstarter has a lot of great methods of communicating through updates, and you can communicate to different pledge levels individually through updates. So once that project's done, you definitely are going to send out a big thank you to everybody involved, everybody that helped you be successful, and then give them a realistic, here's what's going to happen now. I'm going to put this together and this together, and this is going to happen this week. Some people, some pledge levels, you might be able to get everything finished real quick and get it out to them. In my case, my $50 pledge level, that group was the last group to get everything because I had so much stuff going into that package that, you know, I kept sending stuff to the other pledge folks and saying, hey, let me know when you get your comics and all that because they're in the mail. And the $50 folks, I was like, hey, I'm still working on it. Give me a little bit more time. But I had built time into my ending. I said November 1st when I knew I'd probably get stuff out to them by October 15th.
Well, that's great because then they get the package earlier than they expected, which obviously is good towards you and how they view your project.
Yeah, you definitely have to keep communicating. I've backed some projects where I had actually forgotten that I had backed the project. Like it was so far in between the updates, and then one day a comic book just shows up. I mean, it's kind of like nice. Like it's Christmas, like, oh, what's this in the mail? But at the same time, it's kind of like, oh man, I totally forgot that I backed that project. And you're missing that opportunity to engage your audience and keep them excited, because if they're excited and waiting, then they're going to talk to people and they're going to, you know, they're going to be like, man, I just backed this Holiday Hooligans package. I can't wait to get this comic in the mail. It looks so exciting. And they'll be like, really? What's that about? And then maybe they'll put that person in contact with you for another sale or another opportunity to, you know, get some comics out to them.
Well, and even if you build that relationship with people that you've never met before, but you've been doing it by the updates, or because if you keep in constant communication, then there is a little bit of that customer and clientele relationship that is built, even if you've never seen them in person. So when you do another project later on, you know that you can contact them and they know who you are. And even then, now you have a bigger fan base to build off of for your next project. I mean, that's how it would work for me if someone were to communicate with me on a constant level about when they're shipping it and updates and whatever, you know, it is.
And the nice thing is that your Kickstarter project never goes away. So when you look at my No Sweets for Santa, yeah, that's from 3 or 4 years ago. I can still access that from my ID, go in there and send an update to those folks. So when I was starting the Holiday Hooligans, I sent an update to everybody who supported me in No Sweets for Santa and said, hey, just to let you know, I got another project coming. And by taking care of them, as far as, you know, shipping stuff to them, being good customer relations with them for No Sweets for Santa, now there's a chance they're going to be like, well, I'd love to see what else he's got now. So you have that built-in audience right there just waiting for your next project, which is nice.
Yeah, and I actually remember getting that email through No Sweets for Santa. Because for me, like you've been saying, there are projects that I backed, and I don't remember when they're supposed to either mail me the comic or send me the PDF. I have no idea. And it's kind of one of those things where it would be nice to get an update and at least some reassurance that, okay, am I expecting this in December or in March? Like, I really don't know. And so, well, here's a random question. Is there a way to contact the project that you supported and ask them these type of questions of when to expect it being delivered to you or just, you know, anything else?
Yeah, you can. They can always, when you get an email sent to you an update, you can click on the ask the person a question. But even on Kickstarter in general, I can go in. If you have a project, I can click on your name and send you a message direct through their mail system, which I've been able to do to kind of ask questions. Or I've even gone to old projects that I found that weren't successful, and I've emailed the folks saying, hey, I noticed this project on there from 2 years ago, but I'm interested in it. How's it coming along? Is there something else you're doing? Is it available? Can I still support in some way? And, you know, quickly get a response back, and they're like, oh, thanks for checking us out. And yeah, you know, this is where we are, and this is what our time frame is. A lot of times those folks will try to do another Kickstarter project and maybe tweak it a little bit. So I think people maybe get a little defeatist, like, man, my project didn't make it. And if you think about it, let's say you had 50 people support you, but you didn't make it. That's still 50 people that were interested in your product enough that you want to keep in contact with and keep them updated if you're ever going to revamp your project and put it back out there.
Well, there's one that we interviewed, Destiny's Fate, and Devin, who we interviewed, she did not reach her goal, but she sent the email out to everyone that backed it, and she did for a smaller Kickstarter, and I think she did end up, and I backed her again, because I was someone who backed her originally, and I think she actually ended up reaching her second goal. And, I mean, she went to, I think, doing one or two issues instead of the five or six that she originally planned, and had a smaller financial goal that she had, but it worked effectively, because I think she reached it in, you know, 2 weeks or something.
Right. Yeah, Kickstarter is a business in the end. They make their money when you make your money. So they have amazing tools to help you be successful, and they don't mind you revamping your project and putting it on there again. Now, they do have an approval system. So obviously, if you're putting the same thing up there without changing it like six or seven times, hoping that eventually some magical group of people is going to support you, they might at a certain point say, maybe you shouldn't put that up there anymore. But
maybe try something else.
If you could show that you're growing and you're learning, or you're taking a document like I put together and kind of saying, all right, I'm going to revamp it, take some of this advice and do it this way. They don't mind. You can put the same thing out another project as long as you show that you've learned some things from your first attempt. And then having those customers already built in, sending an update from that first one and saying, here we are, we're doing it again, and this is some of the stuff we did differently, and here's why you want to tell your friends about it this time even more, because this is what we're offering.
Well, that's great. Well, John, you know, before we end this interview, is there any more advice or just one last thing that you want to say to all those Kickstarter projects out there?
I think the biggest thing is I'd be happy to, I hope people look at the paper, look at the blog, listen to the interview. If you have more questions or comments, please email me at john@fidgetpress.com. And Fidget is F-I-G as in Gary, I-D as in David, and then Press. Stands for Finally I Got It Done, which is how I felt when I finished my first book. So please send me an email, and I'd be happy to help as much as I can.
Yeah, and the article that John wrote will be on the Between the Bubbles blog, which is some of the written articles that Brad and I have done. And so you can definitely find it there. The link will be at the bottom. I mean, you have our picture, and then we have the bar of where it's recorded when you press play. But in the description will be the link to John's article. And we're very fortunate and so happy and glad that he let us interview him, that he's letting us have access, and all of you access to his wonderful article, because there are so many great tips that John has laid out to help you be successful. Because the thing is, independent comics is what drives, it's what drives the field. I mean, yes, you have DC and Marvel, but not everyone wants to read about superhero comics and Spider-Man and Batman. I mean, without independent comics, you wouldn't have great things like Hellboy or The Goon or what John did with Holiday Hooligans. It's what drives the industry. And so we here Between the Bubbles really wanted to find a way to help all of you out there be successful and just basically reach your goals and your dream of writing, creating comics. And John, thank you so, so much for this interview. It was
thank
my
you.
Pleasure talking to you. And it is always a pleasure. John is a great guy, and he's a huge, great comic book geek. And so, as I said before when I interviewed him for Holiday Hooligans, John is the person that got me into comic books because of his man cave that he had in his house. It was just blew my mind amazing, and it made me want to get into comics and dive into it. And it worked, because that's why I'm part of the podcast today. So anyway, John, thank you so much. Hopefully your family's doing well. And any project that you do in the future, please let us know here Between the Bubbles. We'd love to interview and help you promote it. So
I will do that. Thank you.
Anyway, that's us here signing off. And until next time, happy reading.